You are listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's Bizarre Adventure podcast from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
Good day.
And it's me, Brian. Tonight's episode, his name is Diavolo, which I believe is episode 33 of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, Golden Wind. In which, is disguising your soul as somebody else's soul the most ridiculous?
No, he's disguising it because it smells similar to his daughter's soul.
Yeah, it's like a, I don't know.
I mean, like, essence. There's not a word for, like, seeing soul, so he went with smell for some fucking reason, but yeah, he just went with it. Why not?
Yeah, I don't know, something again, not that this ever hold up as the different parts go on, but you're able to communicate like wordlessly using just your stand. You've all got built-in telepathy, you know, because when you're underwater in part three, if you recall. So I don't know. Maybe Bruno is so fucked up you can't even use that, so he has to just kind of get like a hazy sort of dim recollection of the person he's talking to via their spiritual aura. I don't know.
It's possible that Araki A forgot that, or B that Abdal knew how to do that, but no one else did.
I don't know. Should have given the secret handshake.
Yeah. I mean, like, we had the guy here to show us how to do it, so.
Yeah. Mm. Essentially, the episode is all about Doppio getting Bruno to the mysterious man who we now know is Polnareff. At the Colosseum, without Bruno figuring out that Doppio is up to no good, and also the rest of the gang figuring out that the boss is here, and without Polnareff figuring out that the boss is here.
Basically, yeah, I like how much of the episode is like just on them trying to cross the road. Mm-hmm. Which just sounds like that shouldn't take very long. It's like, no, because there's wheels within wheels here.
We also get a flashback for Polnareff and Diavolo as...
like a cross flashback between them, but they're not talking to each other, which is... it works out pretty good, actually.
That was kind of cool, actually. They're both giving their own accounts of the same events.
And more importantly, we'd learn that Jotaro had just abandoned his mate.
They hung out at least once more.
Yes.
Sorry to fill out the party. We're going to search around the world for these arrows that make us stand users. You take Europe and Asia. Europe and Africa. I'll take Asia and America, and we'll meet in the middle somewhere.
Sorted. At first he's like getting this young boy who he rescued, but he's confused why this young boy's got a pretty nasty wound in his neck, and Doppio's like, how can he see the wound? It's covered up by my collar from when Risotto had got me a few episodes ago.
Well, also when he Bruno's tripping over very basic things, he nearly gets hit by a car, but he's clearly being able to see me and through my shirt and hear me, so what's happening?
And so the boss tells Doppio not to kill him, because if you can get him to the Colosseum, we can find out who it is who's helping these guys out and putting into that.
As they're crossing the road, he sees Mista caressing the Colosseum for unknown fucking reasons.
He's trying to find a secret passageway.
It's full of doors.
Read us in the comic once.
I saw there's a new Mista figure coming out, and it suddenly dawned on me what I'd really want is life-sized figures of the Sex Pistols.
I mean, like, that seems like an easy fucking do. They're quite small. You could easily do, like, the obvious and mean thing to do would be blind bags, and it's like, not another number five. Fucking...
number five.
I like number five, but I got, like, six of them.
They are ripe for... like a keyring kind of job, which I imagine it must have been done backwards and forth by now.
Yeah.
And will it be again out the back of this?
You'd hope so.
You'd hope so. It may just be they'll just be dressing Iggy up as other people. Still.
Dear.
So there's not much left of Bruno, really. He can just basically sense people's auras, their spirits.
Like, eventually he can see the cars, because you see someone's soul in a sitting position moving very fast. It's like, okay, that's a car.
It's like, oh my god, it's a ghost. But it's because, like, the Doppio and Bison, the Diavolo, the boss's soul, is similar to Trish's, and Trish is over there as well, saying, I sense him, he's nearby. I don't know where, but again, I can feel his presence, he's somewhere close by.
Yeah, isn't that when he, like, puts part of his soul out so that
Bruno sees,
Bruno thinks it is Trish, but then Trish detects Diavolo's presence because he's
turned on his soul.
Yes.
Essentially. Yes. If that makes sense. Yeah, he's so light or
I believe this is important information that Doppio has a separate soul to Diavolo for the next episode.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
But as well, like, it's enough to fool the zombie Bruno, who's rapidly deteriorating. And I just kind of cap it off. I did a little touch that Doppio, he takes on a more feminine aspect to his voice and his cadence. He just goes like,
talks a little softer.
Being equivalent of, oh yes, good sir, it's me, I'm Trish. It's time to go into the Coliseum now, find out who the mysterious man is.
Well, he can only hear your soul, so you probably don't even need to put on the voice, but alright.
Yeah. The soul equivalent of doing
putting
that.
Put on a voice, yeah.
Well, you know, it's a good little kind of change of delivery from in on the part of the actor as well as a funny compliment.
Well, we know that guy has range at this stage.
Well, actually, it is the same. I don't remember if I went and checked. I thought we did check. It's the same actor doing both Doppio and Diavolo.
Oh, I meant the two sides of Doppio, that kind of way. If it's the same one doing Diavolo,
probably not, but that would be impressive, wouldn't it?
That would be impressive, yeah. Thank you,
Dick.
So he's got Bruno pretty convinced. I thought Bruno was kind of onto him, and I was like, no, I think he's just completely fucked at this stage, just the way he's fallen about the place. Manages to get Bruno to get him into the Coliseum, but the mysterious stranger hiding in the shadows just behind that pillar, is it Doppio can't turn around and look at him because he's like, don't fucking move, and on the... Oh, wait. It's before he becomes Trish that he gets the call. The first phone call. And then he's on the phone for the rest of it, I think, technically. When Bruno's like, what the hell are you saying right now when he's doing the...
Yes.
Why are you making that noise? That's really weirding me out.
Yeah, it's when they get to the Colosseum is that Paul Rush, like, don't stay right where you are. Who's that
other person? Recognize that person with you. Yeah, show me your stand, and that way I know I can trust you, because, I mean, like, to reveal your stand is kind of a big deal.
And so he's like, well, this is Trish, it's the boss's daughter, it's Trish, and he's like, why has he got a girl's name? And Doppio is like, oh, shit, there's a guy who can actually see me.
No. Well, no, hang on, it's got to be sassy. You got a problem with me being a girl, mister? Yes. Bulletproof.
We gotta remember Polnareff is like a gentleman, and he would be like, I am sorry for misgendering you.
Yeah.
He apologizes instantly. It's like, using his own goodness against him. Damn it.
Well, he is, you know, he was the French gentleman who was a delight with the ladies, or so he wanted to think anyway.
Well, what he claimed.
And then he like pressures the stairs. And then
I think he knows this as well. The Polnareff is clutching the arrow.
He does see that in Bruno's eye. He manages to make out all these details.
Yeah, this reminds me of a time I found arrows just like that all the way back in Egypt.
At this stage, since he's not showing his stand, and he's getting a similar vibe off this guy, Polnareff does his simultaneous. I also remembered the events leading up to now.
Yes, gotta get this arrow. Like, you know, the boss, like, yeah, some of us, I heard about these arrows that can make strange powers within them. So I traveled far to Egypt and I dug a bunch of them up and I met a strange old woman who had two right hands.
She was like, sweet arrows, give me those arrows and I'll tell you what they do.
Yeah. And so I sold off most of them because I only need one. And with my one arrow, I created a criminal empire that took over all of Italy, or most of Naples anyway. Or Sicily, whatever it was, yeah. And then Pondor for somebody else. I heard about these arrows as well. I could get a dangerous thing in the hands of evil. So yeah, me and Jotaro, the two of us, decided to travel, search the entire globe as the two of us. Wouldn't even get the Speedwagon Foundation in on this thing, because they're busy trying to, I don't know, look up that one town in Japan where the guy comes from.
I don't think the Speedwagon Foundation is as good as it seems to be.
It's more, it's diverted away from trying to like stop a criminal enterprise towards tracking down the result of Joseph Joestar's philandering instead.
Yeah. Hiring out helicopters or booking ship passage or that kind of thing.
Yeah, I imagine
they're good for that.
A lot of plane insurance they have to pay out.
Oh, Jesus, yeah. That's probably not great for him.
So he was looking for the arrow and came up against the boss, and that's left him in the condition he's in now. When
he got messed up, right?
You think that would have been like over the course of many adventures? It's like, nope, he just got really fucked up in that one fight.
he kind of figured out the gist of his stand ability, but no, he couldn't.
Because he's seen time-based powers before. Yeah.
Yes. Nonetheless, gets his fucking legs chopped off and thrown off a cliff. also his right eye got taken out as well.
And his arm.
Yeah. Was the arm as well? Yeah, I saw the arm go up.
I think it's his, just below his hand. Like, there's a wrap around one of his hands, I think, or something like that.
Yeah.
Or is it his whole arm?
It's hard to tell. Anyway,
compared to a character in Dororo, he got off lightly.
True.
Diavolo is, like, surprised to see him because he thought he'd killed him.
And it's like, no one's allowed to see me or my stand and live. Fucking, I chopped off all his bits and threw him off a cliff. I thought that generally does the trick.
Yeah.
So he's very frustrated. And he comes up Doppio coming up the stairs, but when he goes behind a pillar, it's Diavolo who comes out the other side.
Yeah.
And Pondor is freaking out, man. He's like, come up the stairs, man.
Time skipping
as well.
Top comes
off, the luscious locks start just like flowing. He's got the L'Oreal effect going on there. And it's like, yeah, well, you got me. I'm the boss. I'm Diavolo. I'm totally fine. And I'm going to kill you now.
So, Polaref bites his finger.
Which initially I was like, is this like a new thing? It's like, oh, no, it's actually just a way of figuring this out. It obviously had time to think how to do this. How to count the seconds that are passing without you seeing them pass, kind of thing.
Yeah. If drops of blood suddenly appear out of your dripping wound on your finger, then you know that time has skipped ahead just now, and he's probably behind you about to do a karate chop to cut your head off.
Behind you is the standard move for him. And the other guys a bunch of them hopped out of the turtle trying to chase down this Triss scenting the boss, and they can see the time skips happening. They're like, oh shit, we're in the boss's thing, and also the boss is here.
Up a good fight though. Silver Chariot still got the moves.
Still quick.
But it's not faster than the guy who can control time. Let's think about it now. I've probably pointed this out before. It's the third villain in a row with time based abilities.
It's a good cheap power, basically. So give it to your main bad guy.
While
he gets a cut on him, he. It's not enough. Diavolo is about to finish him off when he realizes that Polnareff has stabbed Silver Chariot with the arrow.
And so we're just kind of melting and dissolving. I think, oh, well, why would he do that? Was he trying to just kind of take the easy way out? Because he's fucked up now. You can see him. He's on the ground. He's totally dead. Silver Chariot's melting away. You get the special effect with the kind of aura, the spiritual energy evaporating out of their body. He's totally
and
your
man,
done.
Like somehow tells his pulse by putting his foot on Polnareff and going like, "Yes, your heart has stopped now." But there was a guy behind him all along, a spooky, mysterious stranger.
Well, who the hell is this dude?
Yes,
and he's got like a kind of strange shadowy cowboy man, and he has the arrow just stuck there in his neck.
Yes.
What's going on?
Which, yes, pretty much because Diavolo says, "Who the hell are you?" And he turns his head and you go, "Ah, there's the arrow. What's going on?" Well, the arrow mark, isn't it? Because the arrow's still in Polnareff's hand at this point.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And that's where we leave it, heading into next week's The Requiem Play, The Requiem Quietly Plays Part 1.
Kind of like a sad little end for Paul Reff, you know, it's, he...
Yeah.
You've seen him, he was a lovable kind of goofy guy. Got really messed up as well, both the Star Wars Crusaders, but he was like the comedy relief dude, and to see him this absolutely in bits here is no levity at all in him. He's just completely here for business, here for vengeance even, and it's kind of sad. And then you get, you know, fight's a good fight, but he's no match for the cheapest guy you've gotten so far.
Yeah. Well, the reason he was trying to set this whole thing up in the first place was because he knew he couldn't beat this guy the first time around, and it's like, okay, I'm going to pass the torch, the figurative torch, the literal arrow in this case. Yeah.
Yeah. Similarly, Bruno as well. He was, in a
really,
way, again,
really nasty end. Yeah.
In a way, again, the real hero. Well, he's not.
You know, he's not out of it yet, but
out,
he's completely
just not out
fucked
just yet,
up. Like,
but man, he's messed up.
I mean, like, we've started some time ago of, like, he's in the position of he's already fucking dead. So yeah. It's kind of like, is he coming out of this? He's not even technically in this. Yeah.
He's giving Trish, he thinks it's Trish to host Peter.
Oh, that was really sad. Where he's going,
this is all over, man. We're going to, like,
I got a little house in Sicily where you can set yourself up. There's a really nice, what was it, bar or bakery or something down the street. And he's going, like,
you know, you can go get a proper education.
Yeah. And it's just like, oh man, you fucking delivering the speech to the wrong person. No.
Yeah. And you know, like Doppio, aka Diabolo, is just, oh man, this is just too sweet. I cannot wait to see this guy get killed. Anyway, he's a dick. I'm going to find out much more of a dick he is in this denouement.
Yeah, getting very close to the end. Then it's time for all the other stuff we watched. It's the show within a show. It's Let's Go. And we start with Doro, because there was no One Punch Man. It was due to the tennis, wasn't it? It wasn't on.
French Open.
Yes, I do believe, unless it came on later in the week and I missed it.
Well, you said, it was on the news that Fruits Basket was today as well, but that had one this week, unless that's being delayed by some other sporting event coming up.
Let me have a look. Okay, there is. So episode 9 was one day ago.
Okay.
For One Punch Man. Let me check Fruits Basket.
We had episode 10, I want to say.
Yeah, that's right.
That went up on... That did go up on the 7th after all, yes. That was not affected by the... tennis after all.
Yeah, there was something on this weekend, though, because Predicure has been delayed for a week, so maybe it's something happening this weekend, because I thought the French Open was nearly done. Unless it's a final this weekend, it can't be. Well, it's on a lot of time at work. I thought it was nearly fucking done.
Okay.
Anyways,
there definitely wasn't any One Punch Man. We can wait for that next week. Dororo, episode 21, the story of breaking the cycle of suffering, which turned out not to be the story I thought it was, based because the image on Amazon Prime is of the cult and its mother.
As soon as I saw that horse and fall, I thought they would definitely had dialogue and build top of us in the comics, didn't they? I bet they did.
I don't think they don't talk, but really? they look more like they obviously have the much more expressive faces and the eyelashes.
What a beautiful horse! I'll take it.
Yeah, in the comic, it's the same as here. So at the start, they want to use the mother for war, and it doesn't want to leave the cult. And so, in order to make the mother behave, they go to sell the cult, and Dororo buys the cult. Well, so says they're going to buy the cult, and then just runs off with it without paying.
Right.
I expect a very earnest farmer there to say, okay, this is my finest horse, so you make sure you bring it back, all right? okay, buddy, we will.
You know, we're going to a war, right?
And rather than the ending which happens here of apparently just like the vengeful spirit of the horse, is basically the horse is abused by the rider throughout the episode, throughout the comic, to the point, but then a yokai horse shows up and says, allow me to possess your body and we can take revenge.
I kind of, like, now I kind of want to see, was it the ninja guy or was that just another soldier who bought,
it was like
requisitioned the horse.
It was like a lord. It was like a magistrate type dude.
Okay. I want to see that dude get his head kicked off by that horse. I think that'd be justice.
But then at the end of the story, the horse ends up, its new rider is the guy who got killed in last week's episode, the story of the Nui. Because that guy crops up in more than one story in the comic.
Huh. Okay.
And he's less of an antagonist. It's more like he's riding the horse and the Hyakumaru is saying, get off that horse. It's a demon horse, you fool.
So this guy's continually pairing up with demons by accident because he's an idiot.
Whereas I almost feel like next week it's going to be Hyakumaru teaming up with the vengeful horse.
Oh, yeah.
Because they both want to rescue the thing which means the most to them from evil lords.
Yeah. And then the horse is the spirit of vengeance now, I think.
But that's the start, the end of the story. The middle of the story is Hyakumaru facing off against Tahomaru again. And
Tahomaru gearing up to fight Hyakumaru. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And a bit of backstory on Mutsu and Hyogo as well.
Yes.
As soon as they did that, I was like, oh, they're fucked.
Oh, yeah.
You don't give them their backstory at this stage of the story, other than to really, like super murder them.
Yeah.
Was what I was thinking.
Well, there was always talk, you know, as the whole House of Cards is tumbling down, there's poverty, there's plague, they're burning villages to try and contain the pandemic, and then Mutsu's got a little bit of a rash on her neck.
Yeah, and also when we see Hyakumaru's view of them, they don't have as much life energy as Tahomaru and the other one.
They're a bit duller. Right?
Yeah, they're kind of like, there's like a blackness overtaking them. Anyway, shortly later, they've got one less arm each.
And then, she literally said, I'm your right arm and he is your left arm, and that's why they get chopped off.
Guess what arms they lose.
I did like
that swap roles now.
Their genders remains ambiguous even in the flashback. It's like, are they the same as Dororo and identifying as male, or is it just a woman who they've got voicing it to make it ambiguous in the first place? It doesn't matter at all.
I think it's supposed to be like a mirror of the relationship with Dororo. Mirror. They're obviously the most important thing to Tahomaru in the same way Dororo is to Hyakumaru.
And then they get told off by the ninja for not dying.
It's like, what the fuck? He has to save you? You guys suck.
Yeah. But he just turns up, they want to like fight Hyakumaru in a fair duel. Well, as fair as three on one, but
I mean, like, he's got superpowers and swords for arms.
Then Ninja Boy rides in, but I'm charging in a horse, throwing bombs around. It's like,
like Hyakumaru's like, I'm gonna attack that. No, I can't attack that horse. That's a nice horse. And he's like, well, I'm riding on the horse, and the horse has bombs in it. Off you go, horse. Take him out.
It's an exploding horse. If the speed of the horse drops below 50 yards a minute, it will explode.
Like, initially I thought it was, what, you're just going to shoot the horse in the butt and hope he pushes him off the cliff? No. That's part A of my crazy plan. Part B is blow up horse. That was nasty. I didn't need to see the pretty horse get exploded into meaty chunks. That was pretty bad. Ugh.
Yeah. Well, he probably shouldn't have gone off by himself. But nobody didn't go off by himself, but Dororo was about to leave Mark because he's just being consumed by vengeance now. But you can't stay mad at the guy because...
You can't leave him because he knows there's some good in him. It's like his counter to him is like, dude, you can't kill your mom and dad. And he's like, because then you won't have them. And Hyakumaru says, I'll have you.
Yeah.
And he's like, if I leave, maybe he won't do it, but I can't leave you because I'm your moral conscience kind of thing.
Yeah, I'll have you, but will you have me? I don't know. But like, I was super pissed off, but Dora can see the point of view. Like, yeah, you do want to have it back so you can see things the way that's the way I see the world, and that's what I'm not describing it to you, and you deserve to have all that back to you. It's just the way you're going about it. It's just, ooh, I know some of it's out of your hands, but it's getting pretty unsavory, getting pretty uncomfortable, this whole deal.
It's the kind of thing of, like, he deserves to have what was taken from him. He shouldn't have been sold as meaty parts to demons, but it's the thing of the cycle of vengeance is corrupting, basically, yeah.
Yeah, and if and when you get it back, will the things you've done to get there be worth it? Jesus Christ, you know, just thinking, like, once you get, let's say, your eyesight back, you can see the carnage you've wrought.
Yeah.
Achieve this. Will you be seeing things the same way? Because it's not all beautiful flowers and sunsets that I'm describing to you. There's also a lot of evil and nasty things in the world that you're aware of, but in a way you're a little bit shielded from the full impact and horror of it.
I like the way, like, his broken arm from the last episode was, like, falling apart, and his other arm was exploded by an arrow. So he's kind of like, he's just got swords for arms now. There's no... He doesn't have that even false human hand. It kind of it's a way of dehumanizing him. He doesn't even have the covers to have the arms, the peace arms, rather than the just for war arms. Yeah.
Yeah, but, like, he couldn't properly work the arm just to, like, touch Dororo's face. Just kind of, like, limply sort of tapping it against the side of the face. It's like, oh, he's in a bad way. Like, he really wants this, but, man.
Yeah, the cost, basically.
Yes.
Yeah, also I'm not entirely sure, like, the thing that we see at the end is just Midoriya, because when we get to that crack in the ground, we see through Hayakamura's vision that there's like red things in the crack, and then we see, as he's him and the pieces of horses are there, is there's like bits of armor floating.
Yeah, a cursed armor or something is getting in on the action.
They weren't really red, they're more of an orange color, which I want to know what that is.
Yeah.
Trying to think now,
on the color thing, didn't Hyakumara's sword have a different tone to it as well? Because generally we don't see swords as having a particular coloring thing. Again, it's like, is there a meaning behind that? Is his sword representing justice or something? I don't fucking know.
maybe, you know, again, the bloodlust can just seep through, because, like, that is, sword arms are a part of him, so, yeah. You know, it could leak into that.
Sorry, I think I said Hyakumaru, I meant Tahomaru.
Tahomaru.
His sword, like, showed up as something, yeah.
It could be as well, that's what he sees and inanimate object as, but not like, it could seem like a wooden object, or something like that.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
It's green, but like maybe the swords or like, essentially, things made out of metal will appear differently.
I figured it was just representational of something else as well, since his vision seems to be meaningful.
It could be. Sweet fight, by the way.
Yes.
Oh, Jesus, yeah. Some good stuff.
Mm.
And even good, like, use of, like, three-way tactics, that kind of way.
Yeah, next week's episode has the same name as what is the final story in the manga.
But that's not the last episode.
No.
Oh, it couldn't be.
No.
Huh. Okay. Yeah, so they're definitely doing something different then.
Well, it'll be the end of the story. Part 1, part 2, part 3, or whatever they need to do. Or the ominous sounding titles for them.
Yes, okay. Obviously next week is actually going to have a chunk of the Midoriya story in there as well.
Right.
So there'll be some overlapping, I would imagine. And then we move on to Karakuri Circus, episode 33, the Nakamachi Trio versus Lady Spider. But hold on, that's not all that's in this episode.
That's like the start of it.
That's the first bit, in which they have to face off against the Lady Spider with one knife each. So, but they actually have a better plan than knives.
Eating rocks.
Yes, they're going to distract her by performing in front of her, as was told to them by LeFou last week. while one of them sets up the C4 in order to blow the train up. Or specifically to blow the train up, as in we set these charges off at the bottom of the carriage, we disconnect it from the front of the train, we explode it, which will fly the carriage upwards, so she'll slide down towards us and we can stab her with a dagger.
And also to do this while not telling Narumi and Eleonora that they're being attacked by a giant spider monster and everything's fine back here, Don't come back here, because their love is so wonderful, we must protect it. But they're just being awkward in that room, and oh my god, this show is frustrating for me.
No, it's not because they love this sandbite, it's to stop Narumi from getting himself killed before they could load him into a spaceship and shoot him into space.
I think he could probably kick that spider's ass.
Yeah, I know.
It's like all of these guys are going to sacrifice themselves to kill this one spider. Everyone's sacrificing themselves.
To be honest, he's going to have to kick a bunch of people. A pair of them have to kick two people's asses next week because in the second half of the episode, they do manage to take out the spider, possibly killing themselves in the process.
Like, very likely killing themselves, considering they stabbed a giant spider in a train crash.
With their mum's face.
Yeah. God, that was so weird. Anyway, the second half is...
The eating the stone bit was the weirdest bit.
I was just like, I don't think this is a trick. I think he's just eating rocks out of a bucket. Why did he bring a box of rocks specifically for this, I guess? But, like, check it out. I'm going to eat another rock. And his face is, like, bleeding. And I'm like, what are you doing, buddy? I can see why she's mesmerized by this. But it's kind of like, okay, it's not really a trick. It's just, you're just eating a big box of rocks.
And the second half is Alacino versus, I can't remember his name now. The guy who represents like the high class servant in Commedia dell'arte.
The martial arts nut. Yeah.
Yes.
The martial arts pirate. Let's call him that. That's what he looks like.
And Pantalone against, I hadn't realized his name was Harlequin, so there's technically two Harlequins they've made.
There's like an Arlequin and a Harlequin.
Yes.
And it's really fucking confusing.
Arlecchino is Harlequin. That's another name for Harlequin.
Yeah.
There's Arlequin, which is the puppet that Shirogane Eleonora has got. And there's Harlequin, who would make more sense, I guess, if he was a Pierrot, because there isn't a Pierrot amongst the puppets. And he is all dressed in white, apart from having the Harlequin patterns on his arms. So maybe
he's all in white other than that. Yeah,
the thing, geez, and he is just a clown.
He's the goofy one. So
yes, and his thing is that he's fallen in love with Shirogane, and he's like, well, if now Captain.
Well, he fell in love with the doll Francine from seeing all their paintings and sculptures that they made of her. So he thought, it was like, oh wait, there is one of her still left, and it's like, oh, it's the boss's girl, but she was supposed to go into space, but she's not in space, so she can be my girlfriend now.
And Pantalone is like, there's only half of him left at this point, so he's explaining all this, and Pantalone, this is the first time Pantalone has ever laughed in his life, he's laughing.
I like his thing. I was like, oh, I could make her laugh because I've never laughed. You're a fucking joke, you stupid idiot. He says there's half of him left on the ground.
And this wipes the smile off that fella's face.
Yeah, he goes serious, and even like when he's just a decapitated head flying through the air, it's like, oh, I thought you said you weren't going to get serious. Ooh, handbags taken out, you know, as he gets fucking destroyed. Which is like, if you're going to go out, might as well go out like ripping the living shit out of the guy who's killing you.
And Alacino gets sliced in half, doesn't he? If I remember correctly.
No, he initially like surprised your man because he's like, hey, you know, you got martial arts, but there's no humans around that I want to protect. I'm going to use my superpower, loot power, which like keeps him back with sonic forces. But he forced your man's hand to use, I think that the martial arts guy didn't want to use it. He wanted to perfect his martial arts, but instead he's made of missiles or something.
Oh yeah, that's it. Yeah, he's like made of like big red cartoon rockets.
Yeah, yeah. like fucking Acme rockets is probably the best way to put it. But and he blows up like most of him, I think.
Yeah, I believe
it's like, how dare you make me resort to the missiles that I'm made of?
I believe there's enough for him to hobble back at a later point in the story.
It's like half of him. He might actually have both legs, but he's missing like definitely half his head.
Yes.
I mean, it's barely even a puppet anymore. It's just like couldn't he come up with some kind of way to conceal this? He's got like hidden weaponry. No, this guy's obviously made out of explosives.
No. He was really covered up. Like, he's wearing like a pirate tricorner hat, and he's got like a collar pulled up to just below his eyes, and he keeps his hair down really low. So that's where he was hiding all the missiles, underneath his big jacket, basically. Like some sort of missile pervert, if you will.
Yeah, it's more believable than your girl who produces rockets from underneath her. Bears from underneath her dress.
I was going to say, it's bears made out of knives. That was never explained, and I don't think it ever will be.
Do we see any of Masaru's fight this episode? I think maybe a tiny bit at the start, just to establish that it's happening, and then I think...
It might have been just him flying off.
It may have just
been
the
like
footage
that.
From the previous episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you want fighting, there's a lot of it this episode.
Well, there's a lot of fucking like useless fighting. Where your man's like, I'm going to hold you back with sonic forces. I'm just going to blow you up with missiles. You know, it's very unsatisfying fighting, that kind of way.
I guess the Nakamachi trio bit is where most of the action is. And it's not punching fighting, it's distracting.
It's distracting with weird tricks fighting.
But there's some good stuff, like the Dark Abe guy, whose name I can't remember because we didn't spend enough time with him, climbing up the outside of the train as if it's a ladder.
Like, the best part I liked of it, and it was like, well, I might like these characters more if I had more moments like this, is where they're holding the train door closed, because Narumi's like, hey, what's going on back there? And he's like, nothing's going on. The dark-haired guy, whose name we can't remember because we haven't fucking spent any time with these characters, is puking because he's getting train sick. He's getting travel sick, and he doesn't want Eleonora to see him because it'd be really embarrassing. And so he's there pretending to gag while he's like, seriously, Dad, you're going to make me look like an asshole like that? All right, fine.
It's
a good moment, but were there
the
more
trains.
Moments like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, while they're trying to disconnect the trains and distract Narumi from the fact that they're being attacked by a giant spider woman.
And the best bit is George Nakata as Pantalone laughing at your other fella.
Oh, he gets a great bit, yeah. He goes out really well. That was kind of satisfying, but in terms of like characters going out and shit, like I felt like I don't know these guys well enough. They're dying, they're all sacrificing themselves like way too hard for this thing. I felt more bad for the whole Polnareff situation, because at least as a character I grew to like, you know, that way.
Yeah, because you like
these guys
the
I don't fucking know.
I think if you came in, if part five was the only
the
one
first
you've
one you started, yeah. That's basically that's what I'm saying here. Yes. It's like you started on Golden Wind, and it's like, who the fuck is this guy? It's like, but to me, the guy who's watched the prior thing, it's a tragedy. But
it is,
to anyone else, it's like watching this fucking show. Who are these guys? Why do I care that they're sacrificing themselves like this?
But the writing is a bit weird in that of JoJo. It's like you're building up. Who is it? It's Polnareff. Oh, he's dead.
Yeah, it's a bit fucking sudden. You think he would have had at least a conversation or something with the new boys? Oh, no, I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm just saying at least they had established.
He might get a sense.
But you get what I mean. I'm using that as an example of why I feel like this fucking show annoys me.
See, I'm fine with where it is at the moment. There's three more episodes. I think they can get everything in now.
Like, some of the bits that worked in this episode, like Pantalone's whole bit, he's gotten a lot of characterization, so, like, his end was really good. Like, if he's just straight up dead now, which I imagine he is, his head was fucking exploded after being chopped up.
Yeah, I can't remember if his head still talks after the fact. I think the pair of them do show up again at some point.
Really?
In the story.
But, I mean, like, I'd be fine without him going out like that, because, like, he's had enough of an arc that, like, this all fucking fits, and it feels satisfying narratively. It sucks if he died, but it's still satisfying narratively, and that's what's kind of important for a story, and a lot of the story isn't that for me.
The problem is, they've now got the two just, they're now going to head to where Narumi and Eleonora is, and all that trying to keep them out of the fight is going to...
Just make everyone look like fucking assholes, basically, because they're totally going to have to get in a fight.
Yep. That is that. Next up is it which one is it? Is it Fruits Basket first or Sarazanmai? Wacky TV Na-Na-Na first. Second season, episode 9, Onward, Nanaoka's Exhibition Crew, in which it is just a song taking the piss out of TV Tokyo.
I was going to say, it's the theme tune and also the theme.
Uh, I think it's helpful to have seen another show taking the piss out of TV Tokyo to, like, recognize that some of the things, like the bus changing thing, I think was brought up on, that as a TV idea is brought up on, Genius Bakuban last year.
Mm.
Of a TV program of just watching people ride a bus. The draining a lake thing is actually draining ponds, I think. That was a successful TV program in 2017, where it was a TV program where they just went round, drained ponds, and saw what was in them.
Like, for historical reasons, or just for the laugh?
Just out of, as it's a thing, people apparently were willing to watch on TV Tokyo.
And is that not destroying really the environment somewhat?
I think they were, like, discovering things which were destroying the environment in the ponds for some of it, like finding invasive species, I think was part of the thing they were finding. Right.
I was going to say, wouldn't that just kill all the fish in the pond? Oh dear.
But yeah, it's just one, well, I won't say long song, because it's probably short for a song, because the episodes are short, but that is all it is. It's a song taking the piss out of the very network which is airing this show.
How do they get away with this? I don't quite get it.
I suspect that's probably part of TV Tokyo's appeal.
That they take the piss out of them, how crap they are.
Yes.
Okay.
They're a little less, I don't know, a little less of a rod up their ass about being made fun of. Whereas if you did the same for an internet network, they'd say, no, this episode is banned, you gotta take it down immediately.
Right.
I.e., Mr. Rosamatsu. Twice.
Yeah, okay.
Not much more to say about it, really. It was.
Good song, though.
It was a good song. There was some good animation with. Like showing
the facial expressions of
various people from different angles as well.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Oh, and your man gets his skin ripped off. That's fucking horrible.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, dear.
Then we've got Sarazan Mai, episode 9. I want to connect, but I can't express it. Which opens with Kepi being smashed to pieces when he gets run over by an otter truck.
I love that like comedy of errors that is continuing to be. It's like, whoa, and then he slipped out into a busy fucking road.
Then Sarah's got to blackjack him back together.
I mean, he puts him back together, but not really in the correct order. I like the way they don't show you that as well, because it's funnier that way.
He's fine when you do see him later on.
Well, he's a shapeshifter, so I think he's probably going to be fine. Yeah.
Yes, that's kind of the joke, but it doesn't matter what way you went back together. He's just an amorphous blob. You can be fine with just get all his bits bin in one place.
Yeah, I do like that there is still a humour in an episode which is just loaded with tragedy. And even
it's weird to have that crazy slapstick where she's trying to put him back together, and the last bit she puts in is his butthole, and all this kind of stuff is like, what, silly comedy, but yeah, this super tragic background and currently happening things, obviously.
Yes, because Enter is dying in hospital. Well, like, they're trying to stabilize him after he was shot by Toei's brother, according to the cops who are still being otter controlled, which is driving Kazuki mad, because he's like, no, it was two cops who did it.
Well, that and his Enta's sister and granny have showed up. It's going like, hey, fucking, you know, keep an eye on him for us, would you?
Yeah,
you have to taking a break from it.
Don't blame yourself. You know, it was just some criminal. You don't need to do it. No. Definitely, it was two cops who did it. That's okay. It's okay. I know you're grieving, but it's gonna be all right. It's gonna be all right.
And then that is undercut when he's looking through, and then all of a sudden he disappears, and he's there in his kappa form. And it's like, oh, we're going to steal those dishes back, because there's a timer on his head counting him down to death.
And he's freaking out because he can't see the top of his own head. which is like a weird comedy moment to do in a frankly horrifying situation, right?
I know, but that's why I think it works.
Because
it then makes the other stuff which doesn't have the comedy in it seem even darker than would do otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
As we learn that Toei's brother, he's not quite as noble as perhaps Toei had painted him in his mind.
Like, I like the way that it makes him reassess, and it even has that montage at the end where it shows, like, no, he was a good kid, but at the point where you did that thing for your brother that was apparently entirely unnecessary anyway, like, did you, yeah, so, yeah, him, his brother and his fucking subordinate, his subordinate is like, hey, that's your little brother. That's the guy who shot the fucking boss, isn't it? He's like, no, I fucking did that. I keep fucking telling you guys that, but you never fucking listen to me. So it's like his sacrifice of his childhood innocence and shit like that, or sacrificing himself to keep, take care of his older brother was in naught because everyone fucking knows who shot that guy. Yeah. But, the thing of him, like, was his older brother too corrupt at this, at that start, at that starting point? But he definitely is now. Like, it makes you kind of question.
Maybe initially it was, but, over time he's going on with it, not because it got the rest of his family. He just enjoys it and he likes it for himself.
It became what he was about. Yeah.
In a way, he's entrapped by his own desire, not by love.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, fitting, obviously, the theme.
Yeah. Yes, because we learn that the otters are your desire through, I've forgot his name now, the wild...
Reo and Mabu?
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Because he goes and sees who the otter is who's taking Mabu away, but it's him. It's his desire taking shape.
Yeah, and now he doesn't understand, am I motivated to bring Mabu back out of love and affection, or am I just lusting after him?
Lusting, just wanting the thing that you made your life happy rather than out of altruism, yeah.
Yeah, just like a kind of a desire, you know, but it's, you know, it's kind of, it's fierce, it's impetuous, it's not maybe kind of as deep and sincere as he may have believed it to be.
Yeah, sure.
Now, the other thing I wondered going through this is because we see the recurring image of that Brazilian football player.
Yes.
Is that going to be Kepi, his human form, when he finally gets it back?
Well, we do always see him with his back turned.
Yes.
I know, just so you see the name in the back, because his name is Kappa.
Yeah. But the fact that it's the thing that, another thing which unites all three of the kids.
Yeah, yeah. It would kind of fit that he was a beautiful prince soccer player all along.
Yeah. And Kazuki is reminded as well that, you know, Ape has been a real shit to him lately, but like, nonetheless, like, he looked up to him. Like, Kazuki, Enta looked up to Kazuki because he came by when Enta was in need. He was a new kid in school, he wasn't really fitting in, and he didn't want him to be alone, so he reached out and made that connection. Now, unfortunately, poor Enta, you kind of read a bit much into that, but nonetheless, he, as much as he kind of tried to find the connection with other people, you know, like, he's like, whether it be with his younger brother or be with his biological mother or anything like that, he was forging connections, you know, just to help other people out without even knowing it sometimes, and he may have forgotten that himself.
It was a nice scene with himself and his younger brother where he was character. Like stealing the plate, yeah.
Coming back to get the players, yeah.
I mean, like, yeah, but he's trying to sneak out with it, basically. But Harker going like, listen, dude, don't fucking leave me in the dark and shit. And he just has, like, a frank conversation with him. And it kind of, it puts him, it not only, like, puts him kind of right again, but it kind of makes him realize a lot of things, including that the guy who put him onto soccer in the first place was the friend who they think they lost by him, you know, leaving, basically.
Yeah. It pardons his resolve to see this through.
Yeah.
Poor Toy then gets caught up in a shootout when some rival gangsters come along trying to take out his brother. And his brother just caps him, when he gets, pinned behind a wall and he's out of bullets. He's like, shit, I gotta take out this guy. Someone else shoots him. And it's Toy, who he pocketed a gun he saw in his brother's bag earlier when they're on the boat. And even at this stage, still, like, shooting confused between the eyes for this guy.
I thought that was the same gun that he was supposed to, his brother was disposed of, like, years ago or something like that.
He was supposed to have done a lot of things back then, but he didn't.
Yeah, okay.
And Toys, unfortunately, like, even at this stage, even knowing what he knows, his brother still has some hold on him, even though, like, he's striving for this connection with his brother. He'll do anything to get it, but his brother won't do the same. butter, he's buttered by his connections until they become inconvenient, because as soon as he has what he wants from his younger member, from his new support in the gang, as soon as he had their ticket on the boat, whatever, to get out of town, bullet between the head, no loose ends.
Yeah, and it obviously that tells your man that, like, well, what's his big brother going to do to him if he becomes an inconvenience?
Yeah, and he was going to fucking kill him too, because he's another loose end. Because you know you're the other shooter at the scene. You've seen what I've done just trying to get out of this. I can't have you be a loose end either. And if I have to, I will. I'll take you out too.
And yeah, it seems like his brother's just gotten. If he was at the start, it's hard to tell, but he's gotten too deep into this thing that, like, basically corrupted beyond use. And it's kind of the thing of, like, you still, and it's a rough thing for people to fucking learn, and the show's done a good job of showing rough things for people to learn. When you have someone in your family who's incredibly toxic, but they're still family, but you're just like, you're stuck in this weird position where it's like, do I fucking help them try and get out of this, or are they too far gone? Are you only making your own life worse by keeping them in it?
Yeah. Toy probably thought, oh, we're going to get out of town, we're going to pull this behind us. But no, it's just to get out of this scrape. Oh, the game is still on. It's going to, like, pull the same
stuff. It's just going to be this forever.
In whatever town we go to.
Mm-mm. It's just going to be this until someone ends up dead. Yeah, which this is how it fucking ends here, yeah.
This wasn't just like a stopgap, a kind of a thing I have to do to try and keep my family safe and keep them well, to earn a bit of money for them or take care of them. No, this is just what I do now. I know, and I've found that I'm quite good at this and I like doing this. I guess, like, respect for it. You kind of enjoy the notoriety of it.
Yeah. When the three guys kind of confront him, it's like, oh, we finally caught up to you. It's like, oh, there's always some fucking cockroaches crawling out, and he's like happy. It's like, oh, brilliant. I get to enact violence on these fuckers.
So my police are asking to ask you to peel.
Yeah, his brother seeing him react like this is like, this isn't an act. This is him sincerely enjoying the fact that he's going to put violence on them.
Yeah. Brokich gets shot then by the guy, the rival gangster who got left behind.
That guy, yeah.
Yeah. And then he's bleeding out on the proudest boat that they're escaping on, he has the money in his pocket. He's going, take the money, go. I earned it all for you. But also inside is a family photo where everybody else is scribbled out except for Toy.
Including himself, yeah. Obviously this has been a thing that's been bugging him for a while. Like,
yeah, there's a shred of love and decency in there, but it's just been too far subsumed by everything else he's gotten involved with.
Yeah, his dying act is to try and put some money in his brother's hand. It's like, yeah, go buy yourself something nice kind of thing, and fucking dying. Which is that's a rough way to go. But yeah, it's kind of the idea that, like you say, there was some goodness there, but it's been corrupted a long time ago.
Like, he didn't want that money, he just wanted you to stop all this. And remember the times, like, yeah, like when you were just my big brother, I didn't want money or to help you out, and he just wanted you to, like, be there for me and be like my family.
And it kind of shows the little montage of them. I think they're in one of those, what do you call those parades?
Matsuri, yeah. They're just carrying around, just fun, hauling around big wooden floats and just smashing them into each other.
Doing that, and then that's where he kind of gets his love of football, because he sees, like, a poster that inspires him. And it's kind of like, you see, like, the goodness, but you also, every now and again, when his brother's, like, slightly older, is like you can see he's slightly more corrupt or whatever as it is now.
Yeah, it's just that sort of pain of seeing wherever things are now. And you have the really old family photo on the mantelpiece, and it's just it's really hard to, like, conflate those good old days with this horrible situation we're embroiled in now. And even though I should be running miles away from the opposite direction from this, just having those memories, it still has its hold on me nonetheless, and it's put me through hell. We've all put through hell, and just wanted that back, but you don't get it. You don't get to have it.
So I guess he'll be back with the gang next week, as there's only two episodes left. I forgot it was Noitamina, so it would only be 11.
Oh, it's only 11 episodes,
it is, yes.
Oh, okay.
Well, it seems to come into my head, like, don't try that guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I just thought they would be wrapping it up within three episodes rather than two.
You got ticking clocks here. We got separate parties trying to gather the Dragon Balls to make a wish.
Yes. Okay, there's a bit with Kazuki and his brother getting the dish off him and explaining why.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Explaining why without having to go into detail.
No, like, yes, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. Will it be dangerous? It might be.
But it's to help Enta, and he's like, oh, okay then.
Well, if you want to help Enta, I want to help Enta as well, because that's why I wanted to do with you, because you've been his friend, you've been there for him, and I want what makes you happy makes me happy, so
yeah,
go
yeah.
do it.
Gas is escaping from me. if the microphone picked that up.
You.
No, from the bottom.
Bless you.
Now it's time for Fruits Basket. Something I thought was getting cancelled by the French Open this week.
It's now in the press release did say it might be moved.
Episode 10, it's Valentine's after all.
It is. Well, a few months too late, but who's counting?
It's all right, it's Christmas in Detective Conan, so...
went to this Valentine's Day, and of course, it's the most kind of perilous time of year for any of the Soma family members, because especially in school, because you're going to have members of the opposite gender coming towards you with gifts and chocolates and maybe trying to sneak in a hug or anything like that, so you got to watch your back, because you could blow the whole deal, not careful.
It seems like that's what the Catboy's scared of for a while. Like, that's what Honda assumes. That's what, like, you, the viewer, would think. It's like, oh, fuck, Valentine's Day. But then at one point, he's like, he gets chocolates, and he's like, wait, is it fucking Valentine's Day? And it's like, no, that's tomorrow, dude. They're just giving the chocolates today because it's Friday.
Yeah.
But he's worried for a different reason.
Yeah, as well, a little bit why I wasn't expecting it, because I think a little bit of Toru is good influence. No, he's calmed down a little bit, so he's a bit more approachable, so he's getting on better at school, so maybe this seems, hey, that's that Kyo, he's a good looking fella, he's a calm now, like, he's less kill crazy these days, maybe I can ask him out sometime.
So, yeah. I liked him realizing it was Valentine's Day and then trying to mitch off school in class, and the homeroom teacher coming in and goes like, fucking no, you try that shit again, I'm going to dye your hair black.
I like, again, like, there's another, like, reformed delinquent. Because that's a reformed delinquent in a nurturing authority parental role. Because, like, we have the teacher there, we have Toru's mam, who used to be in a gang as well.
You literally have another delinquent in the class who's just sound out. Yeah.
Just sound out, and I also, it's like one of Toru's surrogate parents as well. At least in school, anyways.
Yeah, delinquents are all right when their passion is put to good use. I think is the key.
Yeah, Rose revealed, you know, oh, Kyo is he's not too freaking out about Valentine's Day and getting rumbled. Just oh no, Kagura, oh she'd kill me, she'd kill me if I didn't do it. And she's waiting outside of school, chase him down. It's Valentine's Day. I love you. We gotta go out and do some cute stuff tomorrow. And to make things easier, just because it'd be a nice thing to do, just so we feel less anxious about it, how about we invite along Yuki and Toru as well, and it'll be like a fun double date.
Was that I'm very bad at remembering the names. Was that the dog guy's idea? I feel like it was, because like the rest of the episode is him being the master manipulator. Yeah.
Yeah, Shigure is trying to out-nudge this. Both out of nowhere, just kind of wanting to get these kids out of the house. No, but he's seeing they're getting along better, and they're big again. He's Toru's influence rubbing off on them, and they're being more open about themselves. So, you know, this could be a good thing for them all to do. That's kind of the B plot, though. You get a few kind of fun cutbacks to that, but the day more or less goes swimmingly, and it's fine. The real story is Shigure is. Is out of the house now. On the one hand, to dodge his editor, because he's been clamoring on the phone trying to get him to finish his manuscript and hand it in on time, I mean his deadline. And Toru also asks him, oh, if it isn't too much trouble, could you, like, I made some chocolates for Hattori and Haru and Momichi. If you're going by the house, you know, I could just pass it on to them, because it's talking to my good goodwill. But he also wants to get out of the house and do a little bit of manipulating of his own on the family estate. And like I mentioned before, the Shigure, you know, he's seems like a kind of a, you know, okay, chill fella on the surface, but he's deep down not really that nice of a guy. He can be nice when he wants to, but he does have this like manipulative scheming streak.
He gets the conversation with your man where it's like he seems to be doing stuff to help the two boys and to help Toru and everything. You can see that she's a good influence on him and that kind of thing, but her being such a decent human being reminds him how much of a piece of shit he is. And I like the way it's like he's doing things to benefit other people, but that's because it benefits him.
Yeah.
And he's not being specific how that is, but it's kind of like, yeah, when they find out, they're going to kick my ass, basically.
Yeah. Well, as far as Yuki and Kyo goes, Toru's been a calming influence in the house. And if it means having her around means I have a quiet house, then great. Overall, he wants to clear up this whole Soma family business altogether because he's sick of it. He's yearning for a closeness and a genuine love and affection, but outside of the suffocating family environment that he's been mired in for all his life. Yeah. He wants to get rid of that. Just be more details on that. Kind of, you know, you kind of like a glimpse of it there, because there's a reference when him talking about what to about. Remember that morning when we both cried?
Yeah, they don't get the specific. Like, while he got over it, like, I held on to that and fucking, I tempered it, basically. Is his speech.
It's hard to kind of tell you. It's like guilt has kind of flashed over him when he sees Toru just being so lovely and nice and kind to everybody. Or is something more like, you know, is this like, does he feel guilt about manipulating her or making her just a pawn in this game that he's got going on? There's something far worse happening there. It's hard to read.
Yeah, yeah.
At this stage, but you know, if you get the idea, yeah, he's not so nice. But there's a little comic note, kind of comic note when the kids come back from the date and there's a woman at the front door and says, "Oh, this is it. I can't do it no more. I'm gonna kill myself right here." It's like, oh, you don't need, don't do that. Especially don't do that, because I just arrived home as well, says Sugar Ray. I promise.
That would be your suicide on my front door would be inconvenient for me, which again kind of shows his coldness. And yeah, so it's his editor, and she's there trying to get him to fucking finish that goddamn manuscript.
Yeah.
She's kind of like the overbearing giving out one, but in a very, very upset way.
Yes. Yeah, it just kind of rolls off there. It's just like he's manipulating and then kind of keeping an all front, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just like on his way, just like playing his editor upon like leading her a merry dance around. But even though he has probably some fervent dislike or of the main family of Akito, he will still play the nice guy, play the affectionate cousin and just kind of cozy up and kind of come bigger than scraping. Well, that's bigger than scraping, but yeah, definitely know with this shit-eating grin, you know, facade and everyone. I'll be your best friend until I don't need you or becomes inconvenient for me. Got kind of nice little tie-in to Sarah Zanmai as well. Just, I'll be your best friend until it suits me. It doesn't suit me anymore. Yeah, it's good stuff. I appreciate that Shigure, like, up to this point, has just been sort of like, you know, this guy who's been in the background kind of orchestrating things, but mostly just to set up the kind of sketches and things. But it's
weird,
just,
wacky,
like,
sitcom dad kind of position. Yeah.
Yeah, but then it's laying this whole other sinister edge, this whole other sinister depth to why he does that and how he does that, which will be explored later. And it's just like, what are secrets or haven't been revealed yet. You see a little glimpse of something because while you're trying to get Kyo out of the house and on this date, it's like, you know, he feels he's pushed him too far because you get a little flash of looks like some kind of traumatic incident in Kyo's past, which maybe was actually setting him off and putting him into a more sullen, isolated mood than he usually is. But again, Toru is a calming influence and she helps to kind of get him out of it and Will that be enough when the full trauma of this is revealed at a later juncture?
Mm-hmm.
We'll find out next week. I don't know. Sometime down the line, but yeah. It's still a very, what's the word that kids use these days? A very wholesome time, yes.
Then we've got a slightly less wholesome time in Bungo Stray Dogs Season 3, Episode 34, Cannibalism, Part 1.
Oh, this was fucking class, man. I love it.
Yes, you had any doubts about what a scumbag Theodore is? Put that to rest as he employs child soldiers. Just to get under the skin of Doppo.
Yeah. Mm. Like, even kidnapping the guy from a previous season who was embroiled in a personal vendetta against him, but he managed to convince him at the end of his character and his ideas. But saying, that guy's got an unbreakable will, unbreakable ideas. You're never going to get one over on him. You're never going to make him sacrifice any of that. And just as he was like, oh, won't I?
So he doesn't like exploding children, eh? Well, I can use that against him.
And meanwhile, the poor mafia guys make the mistake of threatening the sister of the guy with the worst sister complex in the show.
Just saying something. But I did like the way it was, initially, oh, we're going to leave him there. Like, that entire face off in the corridor was just him on his own. They've already legged it with the chief in order to parlay with them. It's like, listen, we're going to find the guy who set off the curse, disease, whatever.
Got to defeat the stand user to undo the ability.
So he's there to negotiate. But it's also like, he's also planning A nearly. It's just like, yeah, illusions is a really good power, guys.
Yeah, well, my guess is that Rampo had figured out exactly how he would behave and how the Port Mafia would behave.
Mm. Yeah. And then how to get him out if that fails, so that kind of thing, yeah. Who would be his best backup, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but to have a lead on a guy called Pushkin, she just came here from Europe, and he, according to these records that we got from the government agency, the government's ability users bureau, this is the guy we're after. We're going to track him down and defeat him and make him undo the ability. That would save the boss, and I'll save the boss, it'll save Murray, and it will.
There won't be an all out war. Yeah.
So confident overall. We've got to take option C to try and finish it, to take us off.
Mm.
So, Doppo and Astrushi, they are on the case, and they track down this guy, and they follow him into the tunnels, and where the aforementioned child human suicide bombers are lying in wait.
It's usually just like kids with fucking submachine guns, which they're just like, we can't fight kids with guns because, like, you know, that would be evil. So they just throw like a smoke grenade at them, and
just gas them, tear gas.
Well, I mean, it's non-lethal, but yeah. Even as they're trying to run by in the thing, one of the kids manages to get a bead on him. But it's fortunate that he could pull a gun out and shoot a kid in the shoulder.
He didn't like it.
No, he's really having to push his ideals, which is kind of the point of it. What Dostoevsky's making him do.
Yeah, and it turns out everything was just a false lead. So Fyodor could deliver a message. And also to get over, I think, the idea that it's like everyone he recruits makes the point of saying how nice he was.
No, this nice Russian man really, really helped me out, man.
Yeah, and just trying to figure out what his actual ability is. Is it super persuasion, or is he just really good at persuading people? Because he was able to convince that child to strap some grenades to her neck and just walk in here and be a human bomb.
And there is like the kind of specter of him hovering over her. I mean, like, it's obviously like the memory, but is it the powers where it's like, hey, if you see him take out his notebook, fucking take him out.
Yeah. And it's also demonstrating to Rampo, I know you're a super detective man. Your powers are useless against me because I will just fire false lead after false lead at you all day. I need you in a wild goose chase and both
you guys are making the wrong conclusions. Because, yeah, your man's exonerating piece of evidence is like, the nice Russian gave me this exonerating piece of evidence where it's like, the guy they're looking for isn't him. It's some other, it's a picture of some other guy. And they're like, well, this is probably fake too, but maybe him being the guy was also fake. So we can't tell what's real and fucking fake anymore. I think what was Dostoevsky's message is like, there's no fucking plan B here.
No changing the rules.
That was it. So yeah, all out war is the only way to get out of this, according to him anyway.
Yeah, and then we go to the Port Mafia guys threatening Tanizaki because they want to turn him like a double agent, and they go, "What do you think I'm going to turn?" Well, we know you got a sister, and
you don't work for us. We take out your sister. Look, this one's an assassin. See,
yeah,
like a ninja and shit.
And then it turns out that even though they'd searched him, they had not found the bit of paper out of Doppo's notebook up his sleeve, and when he pulls it out, when he unfolds it, Doppo knows that it's been unfolded, and he can say the activating word, and Tanizaki can say what's on the bit of paper, which allows him to produce a blade.
A knife.
Yeah. And then they get into a fight with all his illusions.
What's his face? Leader
Jin?
Of the... No, that's the guy I just encountered there, and what's the name of the guy?
The grey-haired one with the mustache.
Leader of the Black Lizards.
Yeah, that's Jin, I think. Isn't
no,
it?
Jin's the
gun. She's the
The ninja.
She's a knife girl.
Sorry,
Hirotsu. Yeah.
My bad.
Like you get out the door. I was like, huh, that kind of power is actually quite scarier than it seems. Can we cast illusions? If I had a power like that, it would seem to me like it's probably the perfect one for an assassination. Oh god, they meant for him to get to this building, and he's actually here to kill the boss. That was their plan all along.
Just a good thing the boss has been guarded by, well, I wouldn't say the boss's biggest fan, but someone who knows is like, yeah, I don't want the Port Mafia to end up the way it used to be, the bad old days.
Yeah, Koyo's waiting there. She's got Golden Demon ready to go. And manages to actually stab the real Tanizaki this time, but he still is able to evade her and try and sneak around using illusions. But she says, well, I'm just going to start cutting the air like this.
I'm going to start swinging my arms in a few
days. If you get caught, if you cut the bits, it's your own fault.
In between this, we see, what's the leader of the undetectives? Wakes up inside Anne's room and tells.
Oh, that's right, yes.
And tells them, don't kill Mori.
Don't go to war with the Port Mafia.
Yes.
Because it's like, yeah, we're just going to do more damage by making it a full fucking blown war, a full blown war in Yokohama kind of thing. But also,
the Makinati of Vita. You have to maintain it.
And so we end with everyone in the truck and Sushi passing on the message that he says, do not fight the Port Mafia. And then we get the guy who Fyodor's captured asking, what the hell is your goal?
Oh, your man also got away from... what's your one who uses Demon Snow?
A Kyoka turned up.
Yeah, because she knows the way in and out because she used to fucking work there. Which is like, oh yeah, that's true. I suppose she would.
It's one badass. Just from this, get under, this stuck in, jumped out the window, and
initially I was like, "What's her plan for landing?" And then you see like the James Bond like parachute kind of pop up, and I was like, "Oh fuck, they thought this through."
I'm going to guess that Fyodor's like plan is that he's happy for all these innocents to get killed along the way because somehow he's going to correct that once he gets hold of the book.
I feel like he's just out to fucking kill everything.
Yeah, I feel like now...
utter chaos is his plan.
I feel like he's got a rationalization as to...
Right.
As to the end result. Because he wants... I think that's the thing with all these villains, is they're after this book, and so they'll go beyond what is morally right, because they somehow think they can somehow correct...
What they're... the reason they want the book is more morally justified than the horrible things that they're willing to go to get it.
Yeah.
It's not like, necessarily that they can like wish it fucking all those exploded children back or whatever. But
you might be able to. We don't know exactly how powerful the book is because it apparently can rewrite reality. So.
Yeah, yeah, but it's like even that is it, for their own personal view. It's worth a few exploded children, maybe. Yeah.
No, they packed so much into that episode, and it is rattling along at a feral clip, and.
Oh, it's, yeah, because there's so many different like sides it needs to cut to, and none of them feel like filler. It all feels like this is important characterization, important plot development, that kind of thing. Yeah,
I just like the like seeing the plan unfold. Had a plan on okay, plan A, we're going to try and like eliminate the stand user or the ability user and do it that way. That didn't work out. Well, then what I'll do is we got plan B. We're going to send Tanizaki in the phone and stab Mori, and then that'll put an end to it for good.
Plan C, get him the fuck out of there, because there's good odds that he won't be able to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really weird thinking that this is a director and writer who spent 7 episodes of Captain Earth setting up just the mere basis of the story.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
But that's not as bad as it sounds, because that was pretty entertaining nonetheless.
Yeah, I like Captain Earth a lot. Me and Niall are the world's 2 number one Captain Earth.
only 2, it feels like.
I'm gonna have to watch it, because like that's a reasonable recommendation. I'd say we like some of the same things.
It gets into the weeds a bit towards in the back half. It's a sweet robot.
It feels like when you get to the end, you're like, oh, I think they hoped they were getting a film like they got with Star Drive.
They thought they'd get more out of it. Sure.
But there's so many great characters that and some great sequences that is definitely worth a watch.
I do have like Hacker Girl who gets captured by the bad guys and when she's captured, she's helpless. Upon saying, "Oh, well, you can't help us," I'm going to hack into like the fucking hack into NATO and unleash like nuclear like annihilation upon the entire Earth, so you can't come along and bait it. And then one of the bad guys has the ability to like read people's like thoughts or intentions. It's like, she's not fucking bluffing. She's going to destroy the entire planet if you don't let her go. It's just a wonderful gambit.
It's because they're aliens who feed on orgone energy. So if there's no humans left to get horny for them to feed on, they'll starve to death.
Okay.
There's also a computer which there's like loads of Midsummer Night's Dream references throughout the entire thing. There's a computer called Puck who throughout like the first third of the series is constantly telling another bad guy, "Puck cannot lie." It's like, why did you name your computer Puck? Surely you have enough knowledge of Midsummer Night's Dream to name it Puck. And therefore...
It didn't exist in reality of this anime, unfortunately. So they weren't to know. They weren't to know.
Yeah, not do it subtly, like just do like name it Donkey or something. Yeah.
Captain Earth is pretty great. I'm still annoyingly like volume 2 of the Blu-ray is really cheap, but volume 1 is quite expensive at the moment. Quite expensive. I was like, I just wish they were both 10 quid and not the current prices they're at. But it is on Crunchyroll, I believe, still. Let me just double check. Yes, it is. Yeah. So,
good.
You can still watch it there. Moving on to Detective Conan, Case Closed, episode 942. Find Maria-chan, part 2. The most important episode there's ever been of the series.
So, wow, okay. Really? Like all of the plot with the little lost kid, and you're like, oh Jesus, there's several points where like, oh my god, they're not going to find a dead body underneath that bookshelf and shit, where it's just like, because that would be horrifying, like 4 kids finding a dead kid, like
I've seen movies
like that and they suck.
They're classmates.
yeah someone they know and everything. It just, it'd be really super messed up, but like they're going through solving all these stupid kid puzzles, and I'm just going like, just check every room in the house. It won't take fucking long.
But they're having fun solving the puzzle that the dead
grandmother. I know, but there's the constant thing of like, is the kid dead? We don't fucking know yet. It's like, there was an earthquake earlier, and I was like, just check every room. There's not time for the fun puzzle. We can do that once we find the kid.
The one puzzle they get stuck on is a puzzle involving a drinking bird. I saw someone on Twitter point out that at the start of the series, they would have known what a drinking bird was because people in the mid-90s would have known what a drinking bird
yeah,
was.
Yeah, but now it actually, that's really good because it's like a kid's like, what is this analog technology? You put the glass in front of the bird, does the microchips detect the water? It's kind of funny because they have to ring up Conan on their fucking iPhone and it's like, how does this fucking thing work?
But the, whatever, however old she is, in a,
she should know.
Well, no, she shouldn't because I think she currently would have been born in like 2000 or something.
Okay. No, okay, so it still works then. Yes. All right. Good.
Yeah, she's 18 years old, so yes.
Yeah, no, she's outside the gap of knowing what a drinking bird should be.
So that's the only thing they have to ring Conan up for. Meanwhile, Conan is basically him and the professor are just panicking because they cannot figure out how to fix the fuck up that he did. I like the fact that he doesn't fix it at all. Other people have to step in.
Yeah, because one doesn't even want to ring up Conan because it's like, oh, he fucked up so badly by getting caught on fucking TV.
Yeah,
that like every time, I don't want to ring him for help.
Yeah, every time I rings him up, she calls him traitor for disobeying her orders. But in the end, basically, Heiji Hattori explains, no, it wasn't. You didn't see the dead detective Shinichi Kudo. You saw this guy who goes to my school who looks exactly like him.
And the guy has a ponytail in the picture he shows and like a bit more of a tan, but he does look exactly like him. So all the press are like, oh, shit. Okay, disperse, everyone.
Yeah. And also
the blogger yes. who leaked the fucking thing. The biggest family fan or something like that?
Yeah, she's like the biggest fan of the Kudo family. Because I believe like the dad is a famous author and the mum's a famous actress. Mm. Yeah, that's the right way around. Because I remember that it's the mum on the Kogaru side is a famous lawyer.
Right.
They'd given autographs to her in return for her saying that she hadn't spotted him because they didn't want it to go to their teenage son's head. So, if we give you some autographs and we meet you at an airport, can you take it back?
It was a hallucination.
Yeah, and they'd also got in contact with the school, so the school had asked all the people in the class to keep it quiet as well. So they all managed to cover it up. Though quite clearly, the three people who are suspicious still. And one of them showed up at the door, claiming that he had to make a sushi delivery.
Yeah, he shows up to the door at the professor's lab, and Conan's kind of like, what the fuck? Who's this guy?
Who's this guy? I think I know who he is, but I don't... Yeah, so clearly they haven't, like, had a proper conversation yet.
Yeah.
Works near the detective's office, and he like fits in with some of the descriptions of Rum just as the others do. But then more importantly, the parents have had a word with the FBI agent who's in disguise living in their house. And he reckons the two clues they'd got from the death of the shogi player, it's like Asuka and Rum aren't two names, it's one name. And then
one name that if you rearrange the letters and pronounce it differently
gives you Karasuma, which is the surname of Renya Karasuma, the richest man, most powerful man in Japan.
It doesn't exist.
Well, that's the thing. Yes, I believe that his age is apparently over 140 and everyone thinks he's dead. So it's great. So you've got he's the head of the black organization. So they know who the head of the black organization is, except it's a person who cannot exist. Which is a great answer to that question, because it then raises so many other questions. It
raises more questions, yeah.
But basically, mum and dad are like, we're not leaving Japan, because we now know who's after you, and it's the most powerful man in Japan. And then meanwhile, Bourbon, the guy who is... the Japanese secret police man who's undercover in the black organization is contacted by Rum to find out everything he can about Shinichi Kudo. And he works in the restaurant below the Kogoro detective office.
Like, everyone's within, like, a block of each other. Yes. It's crazy.
And he doesn't... He thinks the FBI guy who lives next door killed his partner, who was also undercover in the black organization. The FBI guy was also undercover in the black organization. And he's also the brother of the shogi player, who is the non-blood brother of the guy who got murdered, who got those clues, which led them to Karasuma. And also the brother of, I can't remember her name now, the short-haired girl in Ran's class, the same age as Shinichi, the other high school detective.
Oh, yeah.
Who knows Jeet Kune Do, who's, yeah, Bruce Lee crossed with Nancy Drew. and their mother is also has also had the same experimental serum that Shinichi and I have, and she's also shrunk to a child. I think that brings up most of the major black organization plots at this point.
Phew.
But yeah, so we now know who, after almost 1,000 episodes, who is the man behind everything.
Oh dear.
Except, of course, he's a man who can't exist.
It was all the way to the top.
Quite possibly, because one of the suspects for Rum is like a high-ranking man in the police department.
Shinzo Abe. My God, I should have known.
yes, apparently, the according to the wiki, only Minami Takeyama, the woman who plays Conan, and the director and producer of the Darkest Nightmare film knew who it was beforehand.
Hmm.
So I doubt you go back and watch that Darkest Nightmare one. But yeah, I mean, it was quite good. I thought it's like quite good that Conan himself really didn't have much to do figuring it out. It was
just like, sort of like panicking. Oh shit! Oh shit! Oh shit! The whole episode.
Yeah, because as he's figuring it out, it's quite clear that his parents have already figured it out in their response. Yeah. It's like they're not surprised. They don't go,
like, they've come home because they're disappointed in him because they've already solved the mystery.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the next door nomad. but yeah, it's quite good because, yeah, he was being an absolute arse. And then they also tease him that apparently they'd heard that he'd kissed Ran when they were on holiday as well.
Oh, yeah, she gets kind of a doing for, like, casually admitting that he was her boyfriend. And she's like, but, like, he is my boyfriend. That did happen, right? And they're both, like, checking their phones to make sure they have that text message.
Yes, because they're all, like, joking. Well, maybe he wasn't really there. Maybe he all hallucinated as well.
Silly kids.
Yeah, generally being jerks. I don't know whether next week's is canon or not. I will check beforehand before I watch it.
Right.
Because quite clearly, based on the fact that we didn't need to have watched any of the episodes in between, we could just,
like, basically they're coming back and it's like, what, remember when we went on that school trip yesterday? And it was like, wait, hold on a second. There's been like 10 fucking episodes. What happened yesterday? Oh, God.
Yeah, so quite clearly you could just watch the canon ones.
Yeah.
Oh, then we've got... I also watched One Piece, episode 888. Sabo enraged, the tragedy of the Revolutionary Army Officer Kuma. In which Sabo is enraged at the tragedy of the Revolutionary Army Kuma. Army Officer Kuma. So, yes, so this is the bit where Sabo is infiltrating the Reverie. Also, Jewelry Bonnie is infiltrating the Reverie. Apparently as the Dowager Queen of Sorbet Island.
I don't remember her doing that in the comic.
She does do that in the comic, yes.
I was trying to, like, was she impersonating this person or making up this person, or is she also that person?
That's the question, yes.
Yeah.
And they both see that Kuma is now a slave being rented out to the despicable world
the
nobles.
Dragons, yeah.
And it's the one family who we always see.
It's always that one fucking...
Yes.
They're the real dick family. There's apparently people... There's, like, at least one guy in that family who's not a piece of shit, but
he's a different family. He's the Don Quixote.
Oh, I thought
family.
He was in the same family.
No, he's
sorry.
From the Don Quixote, because that's why they complained about him in this episode.
Yeah.
They go, right, oh, he's right. Just like... he's just like that other one who left. They're weird lot, those donkey, the Don Quixotes. Then he's like the Saint Charlos, I think. Yeah, so we've never seen anybody else apart from those two families so far. And also obviously the five elders, because they're also celestial dragons. But they don't seem to behave in this way. They will see how they behave, I believe, next week. Exactly their true nature. Like the dad of the family has finally got a turn on Kuma, the indestructible slave.
They're just riding him around like a pony, aren't they?
Yeah, and they're like stabbing him and hitting him, and he doesn't feel a thing.
Yeah, and they have what they need from him, because they have the Pacifistas, the mass production models. They can have as many Kumas as they want. They can revel about and obey any order you give them.
And so we get a flashback of all the appearances of Kuma up to this point. And seeing it all together, it is a... It does tell a slightly interesting thread about like how he's clearly helping the Straw Hats constantly, and it becomes
that like initial thing before the time skip seemed to be him fucking them over, but it's like no, I'm gonna send you guys to exactly where the fuck you need to be.
Yes, because if you try and take this on now, you're fucking dead. You'd be dead in prison or worse.
So basically, he sent them to a place for a 2-year power fucking. Increase,
and then he's
barely
getting his personality left after that, because when they meet him again at Marineford, he's almost an automaton, and then he like hands on with his last vestige of his humanity to guard the ship for the 2 years that they're away. And once you see it all together with the narrator, it's like, oh yeah, now you've got a much better idea of his personality, rather than all these little bits you get over many years that we've had.
Yeah, it's difficult to get a good picture of him like that. Sure.
Anyway, Sabo is enraged. Bonnie's she's like weeping slightly, but she's like, she wants to do something, but she knows she can't. Sabo's about to blow the entire plan, but he gets pulled underground by the three other revolutionary leaders who are here. It's the guy with the crows, the one who can shape Earth, and the zoo inventor guy. The one who's almost the Terry mascot.
Almost.
Almost. Not quite, but pretty close.
What, you mean like a scary version of them?
Yeah, kind of. He's like a steampunk version. They're all steampunks, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's a goggles man, you know. You've seen him on Sabo, we've seen him on Koala, the top hat going on as well.
Yeah, he's one guy who actually wears his goggles rather than uses them as decoration.
Pirates are over. Steampunk is where it's at.
I think it seems like part of their plan is to rescue Kuma.
But, yeah, how exactly are you going to do that?
Yes. Then more Toei. But hang on, I'll let Niall talk about some more Toei if you watch Star. Do you watch Star Twinkle Precure?
I did watch.
I'll tag it to you first, then, before I get to my Toei.
Okay. Tag in. to the Planet of Rainbows, Blue Cat's Mystery, which they go to the Planet of Rainbows and find out what Blue Cat's whole mystery is. Planet Rainbow, as we know, was a planet in the galaxy. But unfortunately, it fell a great disaster. And its population is over 1,800 people were all turned to stone. It's not quite a large amount of people for a planet, maybe, but it's not big enough for a tragedy. And it was like spoiled of all its wealth and riches and resources. And Blue Cat has been creeping around the galaxy trying to reclaim all the lost artifacts and bring it back home. But also, there is Iwan, the Cyclops villain, and her subordinate. I thought he was a space butler dog man, but must be a space butler cat man. It's drawn really weirdly because he's Baka and Yan. And he gets into a little scuffle with them as they fight some pretty good over another princess Pendaga, I guess. But hang on, it turns out Bakenya never existed in the first place. Space Butler Dogman or Gatman was actually Blue Cat all along, which explains her hesitance in wanting to attack the Pretty Cures in previous episodes.
Maybe he's a dog, but that he is a Catman dressed as a dog, and that's his cover.
It doesn't matter, because it never existed. It was Blue Cat all along.
Yeah,
It was all a disguise. And so like, I get into like a little scrap right there. However, over the course of that, one of the petrified statues of the people there, it gets turned into one of the nut triggers, the big monsters that the psychos that they can make out there, which they fight and defeat, but then realize, oh, but that means everyone's not dead. Was if they could be turned into giant monster people by the bad guys, it means that there's still life in there. So there's still hope. So the Predacons vow to help her to find a way to save the galaxy and restore people from break the curse of living stone falling upon your family. But as they say that, Luke Cat's like, I work alone. Smoke bomb. I'm going to pickpocket all your Princess Color pens and your cute mascot Fuwa and make off with it because I need this power to save my people. And it's like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? She fucking gets that one over on us. Looking bad right there. I just try to ramp up now because based on the preview, we're going to be getting the full tragic backstory of that in next episodes and we'll get a fifth Predacure out of the bargain and it's like the head bad guy who was a ball of green fire with glaring red eyes. Spoiler, we were pretty pissed off that he's there one Precure up and one White Hall with a henchman down. And they're making fairy head because they're like, presumably they get all these pens back. There's only four left to get. So we're going to be reaching some kind of tipping point probably within the next 3 to 4 episodes. That'll be about halfway through a season. Or. So that, yeah, that's good. And also, it's probably going to be a pretty sweet fight happening as well. Could be like a cool 3-way or 4-way fight happening, which I'm really looking forward to, because Predacons in the past have been known for their set-piece action spectacles, so which this has been, you know, kind of quiet on for the last while, so hopefully it brings it up to the fore. It was a nice affecting thing as well. Again, why it wasn't like a big number, like 1,800 people. I would say if you ascribe that to an accident, some kind of train calamity, I don't know what it caused, maybe not a whole planet-wide disaster, but it's still a lot of people. But it's still like a high enough number, there's still a number. And Lala is insensitive, but it's like, yeah, it might be just a number, but like when you're down here on this planet, you're seeing what's happening on here, like you see people have lives and existences that they've currently gone, that you can't imagine. What the tragedy that they've all gone through here. You can't imagine these people have actual lives and souls and before it's happened to them. So it's our duty and our right to try and put that back to rights again. So it's good. Yeah. There's a guy that's ramping up here and I think it's finally going to go up a gear. I'm looking forward to it.
We'll also be getting people mentally ready for Dr. Stone starting in a few weeks' time.
Maybe.
It's a good way to prime them, yeah.
Where there's a whole lot more people turned to stone than that in there. Right, my next bit of Toei, before we get to Kitaro, the final bit of Toei, is Dino Knight Sentai Real Solga, episode 13, The Prime Minister is from the Ryu Tribe. Yes, turns out the Prime Minister is over 300 years old.
He's looking well.
And she's been changing identities. Also, she's Japan's first female prime minister.
Did they not mention that up to this point?
No, they had not mentioned the prime minister at all until this episode.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah, but she took nearly 300 years to get to this point, whereas yes. any old male politician just swan in there in 5 to 10 years. This is bullshit.
Yui goes to the internet and there's like, oh, there's websites about how people think she's been living, she has been around for 300 years, and they show all these pictures.
She's the Nicolas Cage of her time.
Yes, yeah. And not just in Japan either. Apparently she's been roaming the world as an immortal. Anyway, the other two guys, is it Bamba and what's the green guy called? She's in the news because she's in hospital. That's why it gets brought up right at the start. Bamba and Toa have gone to visit her in hospital because apparently Bamba knows her from when she was in the Ryu village. He's the oldest one, so that she like treats him as if she's like he's like a small child, because obviously that was the last time that she saw him. And she explains that she wants them to defeat her Minosaur, but you've got to wait until it's fully powered. And he's like, but if it's fully powered, when we defeat it, you'll die. And yes, it's another person wanting to commit suicide in Dino Knight Real Saga. Essentially, it's the old tale of, I'm immortal, but everyone I fall in love with ages, and I don't, and I can't live with this anymore.
Yeah.
Whereas Bamba's like, this is the cards you've been dealt with, you've got to live with this, we're not going to help you. But she's like, tries to bribe them by saying, if you kill it and kill me, I'll tell you about your master. And so there's like a little bit of tension between Bamba and Toa, because Toa's the younger one, and he wants to know what's happened to his missing master. And so he's tempted to not defeat this straight away, which is a nice flip, because earlier on, Bamba was the one who was holding out the longest on, well, we just killed the person who's created the Minosaur. That solves the problem. And so he's kind of, we can see how much he's softened in this episode. Meanwhile, yes, you're like, okay, right. The two bad guys, Kurion and Wizaru, have moved base, because in the previous episode, they'd figured out where the Real Sogas had figured out where their base was. Their new base, I believe, is like in a dingy underground parking place. Then, and Kurion accidentally gets zapped by the, not accidentally, deliberately zapped by the Minosaur of the week. So it becomes clear, like, they haven't created the Minosaur this week. So this Minosaur has been created naturally. So apparently if people from the Ryu tribe get too depressed, they can just create a Minosaur out of thin air without having to have Kurion slime get on them as a human needs. And basically this monster causes you to be honest if you get zapped. And so Kurion tells Wizaru exactly what he thinks of him, and Wizaru is not impressed. And yeah, basically it keeps on saying wanna da, and they realize at the end, oh, it's saying wanna die, because that's what's motivating the Minosaur to being created in the first place, is the Prime Minister wanting to die. Anyway, they beat the monster, she doesn't die, and she disappears in like it's like a ludicrous series. I don't know what particular TV series it's homaging, but I'm sure I've definitely seen it parodied in a bed-in video at some point in the past. It's like this montage of her running into the night in a trench coat, like with superimposed with the roses she'd left her dying lover, and the Ryu tribe necklace she wears, and all the other characters wear as well. So she's still alive at the end, so she may show up in a later episode, but for the time being, she's disappeared. The other important thing is, though, while she's in hospital, there's another visitor, which is Guy Sorg, the member of the Druidon army who showed up the previous episode, who I mentioned was the suit of armour from the four-part miniseries which came between the two different Sentai shows, the sentient armour which possesses people.
Oh.
And she seems to know him as well, and says, you better be careful, otherwise you might create a Minosaur too. So there's some connection between him and the Ryu tribe, as Wizaru had pointed out in the previous episodes as well, that he kind of looks like the Ryu Sogas. Next week the golden Ryu Soga shows up, but I don't know whether it is Guy Sorg. I suspect it probably will keep it you asking that question probably by the end of next week's episode as well.
And until you guess correctly, there probably was, but or is it all a red herring?
Or is it Bamba and Toa's master? Or is it Yui's dad? I did like when they're pointing out that the Prime Minister is probably immortal. He's like, oh, I'm jealous. He's like, he wishes he was immortal as well. But that may be a lie, trying to cover up the fact that he's also from the Ryu tribe. Because how does he know where all these dinosaurs are? There's a funny bit where the dinosaurs get zapped by the LSD ray. And it's Tiramigu and Dime Volcano, the one who asks questions. And Tiramigu's like, oh, I hate it the way you ask questions all the time. And Dime Volcano's like, I just ask questions because I like you so much. I want to have a reason to talk to you all. And Tiramigu's like, oh, now you say that. I do kind of like you as well, Dime Volcano. So they're like, oh, honesty's not always bad. Look, they're much better friends now. They've been honest with their feelings to each other.
Yay!
But it's the idea of these two giant robotic dinosaurs having this conversation in the middle of a city. yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it's weird hearing you like say, "Oh, there's a new Pretty Cure joining them next week," and it's like, "Oh, there's a new Real Saga joining them."
It's almost like they sync these things up, huh?
I'm probably going to give up on Zio till it's ended, because the episode I was waiting for, I discovered, is in the film, which obviously I can't watch for ages. I was like, when is the Drive episode coming? When is the Drive? Oh, the Drive thing's in the film? Ah, nuts. That's almost over, I think, and then it's whatever the new one is. And then I'll lose interest in Rio Soga as soon as Kamen Rider starts. Because that's I tend to be able to focus on one tokusatsu thing at a time. And quite often I never get to the end of one because I've already leapt onto the other one. Now, though, it is Gegege no Kitaro, episode 59, Promise to the Female Yokai Yushirogami.
Good old-fashioned ghost story, this one.
It is. With only one fatality right at the end. It does look like lots of people are dying.
No, they'll be fine. They'll be fine.
We saw their spirits run up, fly away.
Yeah, it's really good, like, kind of cutting away, and you hear like just a scream. There's that effect of just kind of like this kind of scribbles on the screen, just going, you know, very erratic, and then you hear this kind of squelching, gulping noise, like, oh, they're getting eaten or something, aren't they? Ooh, the tear of the mind.
Yeah, because they gradually show you like a little bit more and a little bit more of what the yokai cactus is doing, until it becomes like almost comedic, which is kind of what the horror's always on the edge of being frightening and being humorous.
I thought the inside of it was kind of like this weird, like, otherworldly thing. But when it turned into like a weird, like, dog and came down the stairs, I was like, okay, I mean, like, if you showed me that, I'd probably be fucking scared. You know, that kind of way?
Yeah.
Like, that's just nasty enough.
It's kind of hilarious, like, between shots or pans over and pans back, and this cactus in the pot has just moved a little bit closer. Yeah. Was it always in the counter? Who got this cactus? Oh, God.
But, yes. So, Yushirogami is... she's trying to find a house that overlooks the airfield so she can see the man she's going to marry return.
Yeah, because he promised that they'd live in a place that overlooked the airfield.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she's trying to find the house.
I just got to go on this flight and do this one job and we'll be set for life. I promise I'll come back in 2 weeks. Just you wait. Just 2 weeks. And coincidentally, people are disappearing at a rate of one every 2 weeks.
Like whole families and everything, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so this guy is apparently repeatedly committing marriage fraud.
Is this a big thing, or did it happen like at least once and everyone's fucking aware of it?
That's a common thing. It's like a con man, you know, he just finds a vulnerable person.
Yeah, yeah. No, but specifically like the marriage fraud con. Like, I've never seen it as much as a thing except in Japanese stuff.
I think it's one of these things because it's like help, I'm stuck, can you send me some money, telephone fraud. That's another one which appears in anime.
Right, yeah.
It must have been like one very notorious case of it, and it's
like like a serial guy who got like a load of motherfuckers. That's kind of what I was thinking. Rather than this can't be that common, can it?
Actually, if anything, it's taken off now with the advent of the internet, because you have made out of brides and spouses and also catfishing.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that shit. Because this is like it's the very old fashioned thing. The guy does it himself, basically. Yeah. But
Oh, yeah.
He won this simple pure-hearted yokai from the mountains who was just quiet heart, and kind of turned her into a monster. Yeah,
yeah. It's not sham marriage fraud. It's like taking people's money and then disappearing. Marriage fraud, like the like the Sarazan Mai to do guy. Mm. That was like, oh, that was where we came across it most recently.
Yeah, mm. No, I knew it was recently. I couldn't think of it. Yeah, yes. You're right. It was that.
And the telephone fraud was in Psyche K. with the granddad. I mean, I'm not sure whether that cactus is intelligent or whether it is just...
Like, I wasn't sure if it was a separate yokai or, like, a manifestation of her hate as a cactus.
No, I think it's a separate yokai cactus.
Okay. Yeah, it was one of the last things she had on her than when she had to pack up her belongings and move out of her old home when...
So someone gave her a moving gift of a yokai cactus or something, I guess.
Yeah, pack your things and get out if you're a ghost.
Yeah, because it becomes clear that like she fell in love with this guy. She was already a yokai at this point because Kitaro is like, you shouldn't fall in love with humans. What do you think you're doing? But then, yeah, they basically at the end is like, okay, right, you promise not to do this again, then Yushiro Ragami will leave you alone. But she gets like a grin over her face after Kitaro thinks he's sorted everything out right at the end.
Yeah, because he's kind of like, listen, if you don't fucking do any more crimes, literal fucking crimes, then I can keep her back or whatever.
Yeah.
But like when he's kind of looking off at the end, he was like, "Well, I wasn't going to stop that."
No,
you get one for free.
Or is the way that he throws the woman that he's currently doing the fraud to in between him and Yushirigami at the end? He's like, "This guy is an absolute scumbag."
Yeah,
but I thought it was going to go super dark and have Rei show up and kill Yushirigami and like have the fraudster get away. And I was like, oh, yeah,
well, they can't pull it all the time. We're just like, they do this whole narrative and it comes to a natural conclusion. And then also Rei was there. You gotta remind
and he shows up just to fuck with the satisfying conclusion.
It's like, as you see, this yokai turned bad, like all the rest of them. So, blah, 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 blah. No.
But he didn't show up that often, which I think is the point. I think they're deliberately leaving him out to make you think that he's gonna show up. And then
surprise, motherfucker.
Yes.
One of these times he's going to show up at the start of the episode and you're just going to be like, wait, what? Yeah.
Yeah, because this would be in his modus operandi. It's like, oh, this is somebody who, the yokai who is attacking humans. And
I don't care if he's a piece of shit human. Yes.
Yeah.
I thought it was doing way too good of a job just building up the atmosphere and this to kind of pull legs off wonders and out. Like just like that, there's like a way more intense, like a disturbing scene when Ratman is relating how he got caught up in this whole thing to begin with, and she's like, "Yeah, but I love him. I just love him so much." And she's really kind of wigging out and getting a weird look in her eyes, and you know, the screen gets a lot more distorted and kind of very unsettling. Which all feeds into then that, and that's how you denouement when you think, oh, yeah, you tell him once, and you think he's not going to do it anymore, but he's straight back on it, and you get one warning. You get one warning from Kitaro, and that's it.
Well, I don't think Kitaro knew that she was then going to go and break his neck.
I feel like with him, like, looking off into the sky where, like, it seems to be her, he's looking at the friggin', the contrails or whatever, but it seems to be kind of suggesting her weird, wispy tail. It's kind of like, I can only protect him once.
Yes, but you didn't see the face that she made, like, after
saying
that she wasn't going to go after him.
Yeah, well, she was waiting for him to slip up, I suppose, till death was part.
I mean, what I'm saying is Kitaro is not the laughing salesman. He's not going around giving people a single rule.
Yeah, but he will just save you once, and if you fuck it up a second time, he will watch you burn.
Yeah. I mean, the same was your man, the comedian, who stole a joke from that yokai, and then you got fucking killed for it. You were warned to not don't do that, very nicely.
Yeah, Kitaro didn't stop him the second time. It was kind of like, it's out of my hands now. It's legal now because you got the warning, the Kitaro warning.
Yeah. It was nice to see that shit had go down though in this episode, because the Yushirigami is it preys it preys on the cowardly, and it actually can be seen as a manifestation of your own inner cowardice. Its main diet is fear. It's good to see him get his.
They often tug on the hairs on the back of a person's neck and then vanish just as they turn around to see who touched them.
There was a lot of shots of that, of like her just appearing as like a shadowy figure in the background with the camera kind of pans around, or the character moves out of the way and she was standing behind them the whole time.
There was some good like haunted house stuff going on. Yeah. We go upstairs and then TV's turned on. Who did that? Oh, it's like a note posted to it saying get out. And I think she wants to get out. Look up the ceiling. It's plastered with notes saying get out.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably leave.
I like the fact they lent on most of the ghost house kind of stuff with Mana, because at least that's a character we like and that kind of shit. So her running around and hiding in cupboards or under the stairs kind of thing, that was pretty good. And just her being a badass and going on the daddy eyeballs advice is like, hey, Killer needs to be told what the weakness is. And it's like, cool, I'll jump inside the cactus. He's like, don't jump inside the cactus.
I like that when they get back out of the cactus, we see her about to stick a nail through.
Nick of time.
You gotta nail that fucker down, he's dangerous. Dear.
He has a big finger gun for a small guy. Also, I saw Kidder, if he wants to, he can do five finger guns at once.
I don't think he can aim it, but it's fine, because he didn't really need to aim it at the time. It's just like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, we haven't seen him detach his fingers or his hand like he does in the comic and various other things. But
there's a lot of body horror missing. So
yeah, there's there's a fight where he has to shoot every single hair out of his head till he's bald.
Yeah.
We did get some the other week, so we've had our dose of super weird body horror. I'm not sure they're going to give us much more than that.
And that made this go as light on the horror. All those families didn't die. They're totally fine.
One guy's totally dead,
though.
Yeah. The spirits fly out of the defeated yokai, and everyone returns to life. It was because it was like the little, I don't know what you call them on cactuses. I've never had one.
Spikes?
No, like the little nodule bits.
Oh yeah,
were appearing whenever it started using. Yes, the arms of the cactus.
I mean, not this cactus, but I don't know cacti.
Yes, that's when it starts digesting them.
I feel like you can replant those. I used to keep cactuses, but I've forgotten everything I know about
plant husbandry.
Was Mana's friend in this one? Was she in a prior one? Because I'm always questioning that every time someone rings up Mana.
So.
Like, it's just
no. She was in the one where she got spirited away to the land of the eternal children, and then
the
same one, yeah.
God, she's having a rough fucking year.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
She looked like weirdly drawn, too young this episode, I thought. In the few scenes,
maybe she
de-aged
in the thing,
yeah. Well, maybe she got a few years extra back when she came back from the spirit world.
Yeah, maybe.
Because, I was confused as well. Until Mana said, oh, that's my friend, I was like, well, she seems like she's like in a totally different grade of school to you.
She meant that in like a figurative sense, which she's losing her friend because they're dirt or they're going two different passed on, hanging out two different crowds,
two different schools. Yeah,
but you know, I just think there was like not quite the usual high quality in some of the family scenes.
Sure.
The middle,
I think it's like again, it's they're saving that for the ghost stuff, and also these aren't the main cast, so they're not going to be as on model.
Yeah. That is true. Rightio, is that the lot? Nothing else. Nobody.
Please God, yes.
Nobody squeezed any more stuff in. Righty-ho, that ends this week's episode of Let's Go JoJo. Be back here next week for. What did I say it was?
The Requiem Plays Softly, Part 1.
That sounds about right.
Softly, quietly.
Yeah. Episode 34 of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. In the meantime, check out our regular podcasts at secretofthesailormadness.com and dynamiteinthebrain.com. Goodbye.
Oi. Good night.